It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. A very special podcast. It's Saturday night after another week of college football action. And with us we have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How you doing, man?
What's going on, David? Good to be here with you.
A lot of fun, as always. Kind of weird, no East Carolina game. We'll talk about that in a little bit. We have Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, Bubba?
What's up, guys? It's great to be here. Looking forward to talking some football.
And a very special guest, former player from ECU and now a college football analyst, Jay Sunhofer. Jay, what's up, man?
What's up? What's up? Happy to be back.
So glad to have you. So glad to have you on. Appreciate all that you're doing for college football. You're making us proud, and I know that there was a lot of exciting action. Jay, I wanted to start with you. How are things? I know you had an interesting thing. Bubba had a great point. You actually had a game on Wednesday, on Hump Day.
Yeah.
You had Campbell and Coastal Carolina. What did you think about that?
Well, I'll tell you, I thought it was awesome that both programs found a way to get the game in, even though it was, Wednesday at 2:00. Not too many Wednesday games, but they found a way. So I thought that was great. And I mean, from a player's perspective, you want to play, especially during the season, you want to play games. So I thought that was great. But, Campbell in that ball game, they looked amazing in the first half. I mean, they were up on Coastal Carolina in the first half, but then the second half, Coastal just kind of took over. But Coastal's going to win a lot of games in the Sun Belt, and Campbell's first year of scholarships, and they're really coming on strong.
Very excited. As a matter of fact, it's amazing how many – I feel old, but it's amazing how many FBS schools we have, and now there's a lot of FCS powers. I know, Jay, that you run into with both, but I guess North Carolina, with the population, with the state growing in size as far as number of people, we're just going to have more and more good programs in football.
Yeah, and also, with the growing size and also, too, just the coaches, Mike Minner's at Campbell, and he's an awesome coach and great player. So they're really doing a good job recruiting, and a lot of schools are having success.
I know you had also the Charlotte ODU game as well, right?
Yeah, on Thursday. So that was Thursday at 4:00. That was a big game for both teams. Charlotte was 1-1. ODU's 0-2. I know ODU's playing East Carolina here in, I guess, a couple weeks. But Charlotte won that ball game 20-25, but they really needed that. So 2-1 now going into a three-game stretch where they're on the road.
Yeah, I watched that game, Jay. I kind of thought Charlotte dominated that game, even though the score was closer than the way Charlotte played. I thought they should have won that game, by more points based on the way they played.
Yeah, they could have scored. Yeah, they could have scored some more at the end there. But it was just important for them. They've got a redshirt freshman quarterback that played his best ball game on Thursday. And a young team, but they're getting better, and I like their schemes they're playing with. And they did control that ball game.
What do you think about the Monarchs matchup with the Pirates in a couple weeks?
Well, I'll tell you what, they've got two great wide receivers, but other than that, I mean, if ECU comes to play, they should win by two or three touchdowns.
Yeah,
wow. I wasn't impressed by Old Dominion.
Now, Jay, I have a question. You're referring to those wide receivers that ODU has. Now, obviously, it's been 5 years ago since ECU played ODU in that season opener under Coach Ruff and Shane Carden. I think we beat them 52-38 or something of that nature. But we had Taylor Heineke at ODU at the time. What's their quarterback situation like right now?
Their quarterback, he's not on that level.
No.
He can run a little bit, passing. He's not a threat. So the quarterback situation there, they can't throw it like Heineke could. So their main weapons are they've got two really good wide receivers. They can't run the ball, and then their quarterback is okay in some short routes, but he's not a deep vertical threat. They've got a linebacker that's like fifth in the country in tackles. That's a hammer. And their defensive end that's probably going to get drafted. But other than that, they don't present, you know, any scary challenges or anything like that.
It's going to be a must win for the Pirates. And, you know, guys, one of the things I want to mention is we can talk about the Pirates here in a little bit, but the Pirates have a chance to be 3-1 if they can win somehow this coming week against South Florida and the ODU game, and that would be 3-1. And it goes back to how much it hurts for the A&T loss, because they could have a perfect record in September. Not to get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, not to get ahead of ourselves, but it would have been a lot. It sure would have been a lot easier to go 3-1 had we beat A&T. And then you could have went 3-1 by beating A&T, Carolina, and ODU. Not saying that we can't beat South Florida. South Florida, you know, everybody made a big deal out of their win over Georgia Tech, and then Georgia Tech lost again today. I forget to who, but they didn't look very impressive.
They and lost then, to Pitt.
To Pitt, exactly, who got blistered by Penn State last week. And then South Florida struggled with what I perceive to be a bad Illinois team today.
Yeah, Illinois is not good at all.
I was just going to say, I didn't get a chance to watch any of that USF-Illinois game. I know my dad did, and I knew USF was able to pull it out there at the end. I think they scored 18 points in the fourth quarter, 18 right. unanswered, if I'm not mistaken. So went, 2018. But I was looking at the box score from that game, and I saw that USF had rolled up over 600 yards of offense.
I didn't realize they put up that many yards.
Illinois had about 380, 390.
Wow, was it a game of turnovers? Did they turn it over a bunch? Did anybody get to see that game?
I don't recall. I know. I think it's Barnett, maybe the quarterback for USF, that he threw for a little over 400 yards, and he had a 50-yard touchdown pass that I think was decisive to score.
Okay. Well, what did everybody watch today, Jay? Jay, what did you call anything today, or did you just watch games on TV or what?
Yeah. No, I just watched. I watched some of the Michigan game. Saw some of the Auburn LSU. Was watching the Ohio State tonight, and then the USC Texas game. So a lot of great games. But I'll tell you, the Auburn LSU game, that game went down the wire. I just had a feeling LSU on that last drive was going to find a way to win it, but Auburn. Yeah, I think Auburn and LSU are still going to have great seasons.
Yeah, I wasn't able to watch that game because I didn't have power at the time, and it was a CBS game, so I couldn't watch it on the ESPN app on my phone dealing with the hurricane here. But I was able to listen to it, and I was listening to the Auburn play-by-play guys on the TuneIn app, and they were screaming that the pass interference calls that went against them on that final drive, I think there was two of them, were
it was pretty weak. Yeah, they were pretty weak. Yeah. I wouldn't have called him in that situation.
Yeah, you hate to see officiating call, you know, have any kind of say in the outcome of a big game like that.
Yeah, well, their kicker made a big kick there under pressure.
Yeah, I know that they won it on the field goal there at the end. So absolutely, props to LSU. You know, we actually are close friends with Ed Ogeron here on the podcast.
Yeah, Bubba, we actually have a special guest, don't we?
Yeah, we do. That's what, like you said, and LSU, of course, had that tremendous finish coming back. I think it was 21-10 in the fourth quarter. They trailed at number 7 Auburn, and they were able to pull it out 22-21 on Tracy, the grad transfer kicker, hit that 42-yarder to produce the dramatic win. And now we're so fortunate to have with us the head coach of the LSU Tigers, Coach Ed Ogeron.
And, Coach O, welcome to the podcast.
Well, what's going on, guys, here on the Skype? Good to be here with you on the Sports Objective podcast, celebrating a big win for the Bayou Bengals.
Yeah, Coach, I know that you had a really tough game here, and you got to be feeling better about this year. And certainly I wanted to ask you, how do you celebrate a win?
Well, you know, there's only one way to celebrate a big win here at LSU, you know, with the Bayou Bengals. So what we do here is we have a crawfish waffle. It's delicious. It's a delicacy down here in Baton Rouge. And, you know, we wash it down with a little bit of Cajun moonshine, and that's the only way to celebrate a win here in Tiger Land.
Oh, my goodness. So the Cajun moonshine, I've heard it all. And the Cajun crawfish waffle. I've never heard of that before. That's got to be a special delicacy for you.
It's a delicacy, Dave Richmond. It's a delicacy. The crawfish waffle is a specialty up down here in Baton Rouge. And you get it, you suck the head. You suck the head down the crawfish, and then you put the rest of the crawfish down the waffle, and put a little hot sauce on, a little maple syrup. It's a delicacy down here in Thailand.
Well, Coach, I know that you've actually been working really hard. You got the big victory. Sounds like you've had some Cajun moonshine there. So we'll let you get back to celebrating that big win with the Tigers, and good luck to you next week.
Well, we thank you very much, David. It was a pleasure to be here with you on the Sports Objective podcast here. And I just wanted to say LSU is the real purple and gold, not East Carolina, and Tiger Bait, baby.
Oh, wow. So, Jay, what do you think? We had Coach O on the show. We had two big guests. We have you and Coach O tonight.
Well, he's a bigger guest than me. that's a good get. We got him from the locker room, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I appreciate him coming on to talk. I didn't appreciate his comment about they're the real purple and gold, but I guess, you know, if you beat Auburn, you can claim that.
Yeah.
Hey, well, guys, I got a drop. Did I miss Coach Ahokian?
Yes, you did. Yes, you missed him. Oh man, you missed him. He's been dipping into that Cajun moonshine apparently, and celebrating with the Cajun crawfish waffles.
Well, you know, you can't blame a man. He had a huge victory tonight over Auburn, him and his LSU Tigers, and you can't blame a man for celebrating. And if he chooses to celebrate with Cajun moonshine and crawfish waffles, that's his choice.
All right, Jay, I wanted to ask you. I did get a chance to watch. Man, Alabama is good, but that Ole Miss defense looks really bad, don't you think? We were talking about that before you came on with us.
A little. Yeah, they didn't really show up tonight, did they? I mean, they should probably be embarrassed. I wouldn't want to watch film. I wouldn't want to watch film in there tomorrow.
It's 62-7 right now on the Grove there in Oxford. I would imagine they haven't felt this bad about their football team since Coach Ogeron was there, oddly enough.
Alabama's slowing down in the second half here. It's only 62.
Oh yeah, I was going to say this game was unfolding a lot like the ECU Memphis game last year. As far, I think it was 49-7 at halftime, and then this game tonight in Oxford. And I know taking a look at that matchup, I'd say that Ole Miss defense surely should not be going by the Land Sharks right now. That's for sure.
That's not a Land Shark defense. I don't know what you would call it. I'd call it a pretty crappy defense, but. It's bad. That's terrible. And their defense hasn't looked good all year, but their offense has played well. And tonight, Bama's just stifling their offense.
Yeah, I tell you one thing, guys. Looking at the schedule, several weeks down the road, and we were just talking about LSU. Of course, had Coach O on. Coach O and his Tigers are now 3-0 after that big win on the Plains today over Auburn. And I tell you what, looking at their schedule, they have a very good chance at maybe getting to 6-0. They have La Tech, our old buddy Skip Holtz, next week. And then after that,
yeah.
They have...
Jay, you know Coach Holtz, right?
Yeah. He was our ball coach back in the good old days.
That's right.
Yep.
But
back in the days of winning conference championships.
Yeah, definitely won.
But after LSU faces La Tech next week, they have Ole Miss coming to Baton Rouge, and then in the first week of October, they go to the Swamp. So if they're able to reel off wins in those three games, which I think is very likely, they could be 6-0. And listen to this three-game stretch, guys, the three teams that they have coming to Tiger Stadium, the middle of October, and then they have a bye week, and then the third game of this stretch is the first week of November. They have number 3 Georgia on the 13th of October. On the 20th of October, they have number 16 Mississippi State. And then the first week of November, they have number 1 Alabama. Talk about a three-game stretch.
Wow. Yeah, that'll make or break their season, obviously. If they can go 2-1 during that period, they'll have a real good shot at winning the SEC West. And certainly, Coach Ogeron, who was a little bit on the hot seat this year, right or wrong, he would squarely be off the hot seat if they go 2-3 through that stretch, or 2-1 through that stretch.
I'll tell you who's on the hot seat right now, guys. You know, one of my least favorite coaches, Jay, that you don't know, is I'm not a big fan of Willie Taggart, and I want to get your reaction, guys, to I mean, I know Syracuse is not as bad as they were, but when you're Florida State, you shouldn't be losing to Syracuse, right?
You know, that's kind of been Taggart's MO anywhere he's gone. He's kind of struggled the first year or two, Western Kentucky, South Florida. I guess even at Oregon last year. Their defense is good enough. If their defense would play four quarters, they'll be in some ball games this year if that offense can come around at all. But they're not going to – I tell you what, Florida State fans are not going to put up with even for 1 year. If he goes 1-11, 2-10, 3-9, he may be gone after 1 year. They're not going to put up with that Tallahassee.
Yeah, that's – they don't
say take – I'm sorry, Dave. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that very thing is that – maybe East Carolina we put up with it, but they're not going to put it up with it at Florida State.
No.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Taking a look at that game today, of course, Dino Babers and the Orange, they've had some signature wins the last couple years. I know they beat Clemson, of course, and then they also, I think it was Virginia Tech, they took down in the Carrier Dome. But each of the last 2 years, they went 4-8, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
This year, of course, they're off to another 3-0 start after today. And then taking a look at some numbers from today's game, you're talking about the FSU offense. I was watching the game earlier, and they had Jesse Palmer on. I think it was right after that game had ended. And he was talking about the Florida State offensive line. And I know we've mentioned that in previous podcasts, how poor the FSU offensive line is performing. And today, FSU guys, 11 first downs, 1 of 14 on third down, 62 rushing yards, and 240 total yards.
Wow.
That's nightmarish. I mean, I give Syracuse credit that they're a much improved team, and I think they will be a bowl team this year. But, man, Florida State, there's no way they should ever just get dominated at the line of scrimmage and just really in every aspect of the game like they were in the Carrier Dome today. Jay, did you get a chance to watch any of that?
Yeah, I mean, that was embarrassing. And, I mean, I'm one of those that when a new coach comes in, I think you can tell pretty quick whether it's going to work or not. And, I mean, I know it's only a couple games in the season, and, you know, sometimes new coaches have to kind of break everything down to build it back up. But, I mean, they look lost, and they have too much talent to be getting, you know, blown out and barely scoring until the fourth quarter.
Jay, are you talking about East Carolina or Florida State? Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, kind of. I was talking about Florida State, but kind of both.
Well, what are you? We'll just jump on that then just for a second. I don't know how much you want to get into that, but what are your thoughts on Coach Montgomery and the direction of the program?
Well, I mean, for me, it's just, you know, I'm glad they beat North Carolina last week. I mean, that was really good because, you know, that's one of our rivals. But, I mean, losing to A&T is unacceptable. I mean, that should never happen under any circumstance. And, you know, I know sometimes it takes time, but our program should be winning. We should have a fan base that's excited and we can see progress. And, you know, You know, we'll see here in the coming weeks, but I just don't see the progress from the first 2 years. And I haven't been happy. You know, it's honestly hard watching when you care so much and the team's just, I mean, the first game of the year when you lose to A&T, I mean, that's not acceptable.
No, I agree with you. And we had a very emotional podcast afterwards expressing those feelings. I do wonder about the A&T situation. If you watched us against Carolina and Jay, you played, see what you think. I thought it was blatantly obvious that we were intentionally vanilla against A&T and tried to save a lot for Carolina, which I understand that was some of it. I understand saving the Holt Naylor stuff for Carolina. But to not play two of your best running backs, Hassan Howell had two carries, Darius Penix had no carries, and you saw how effective they were against Carolina. Do you think, like I do, that maybe Montgomery intentionally tried to be too vanilla, thinking we could just basically out-talent A&T?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it. But I also think, like, I mean, we could have run quarterback sneaks every play, and we still should have won. You know, I mean, they, you know, the clock management at the end of the game was terrible. But I'm one of those. If the team doesn't play well, I don't blame it on the kids. I blame it on the coach. You know, I mean, it's the coach's responsibility. They're getting paid. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I just think that was, I mean, it was terrible. I mean, it was terrible, and it was embarrassing. And, I mean, to me, the players have responsibility, but it's the coaches are the ones getting paid. It's their responsibility. Everything, when you're the highest, you know, when you're the manager at a job, when you're, when you're the president, when you're president of a company, when you're a head coach, all the responsibility falls on you. So that's just how I feel.
That's exactly right, and that's how I feel too. That's what I've been saying. You don't blame the kids on scholarship. You blame the guy that I'm making $1 million a year.
Yeah.
Go ahead, David.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say that the game itself, as far as the Carolina game, was a nice win, certainly. And we have a chance to go 3-1. I want to get your take, Jay, too, on I don't know how much you've been able to follow because you've had to work and we haven't. You've actually had to work for a living. But as far as the whole Virginia Tech situation, are you following that and what's been going on in Blacksburg and Greenville? It was kind of a tough week.
You guys there?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Do you have any thoughts on that? Their response?
I mean, I've kind of followed it just from afar, and I know they wanted to play the game. There's kind of a back and forth, right, with ECU
correct.
And Virginia Tech, as far as that goes. Yeah, I certainly understand everything going on in Eastern North Carolina, and you know, respect that, and I know is very tough, and it's terrible what's happened with this hurricane. I wish they would have played the game just because I want to see our team play. But I don't know the internal details, you know, enough to talk on it. But I wish they would have played or played earlier in the week. But that's just me wanting to see the team play, you know.
Well, the Virginia Tech AD didn't want to play earlier in the week. He wanted to wait until Wednesday to make a decision.
Yeah.
At the time, the hurricane was forecast to be a Category 4. And
it
has wreaked havoc as a Category 1, like major flooding. And major flooding still to come. So if it would have came through as a 4 –
yeah,
those boys would not have been able to make it back to Greenville from Blacksburg.
Yeah,
they would have had to go over there to South Florida. I thought the reaction from the Virginia Tech AD. I thought tweeting out the picture of how Virginia Tech's playing in Hurricane Matthew and saying they were waterproof, particularly being the catastrophic flooding in Eastern North Carolina after Matthew in 2016,
was
rather classless.
I didn't see all that, but yeah, that's ridiculous. I mean,
yeah.
And he got his, like I was saying in our Hurricane Florence podcast, it was supposed to be the Pirate preview, but we had to do that. I felt like, Jay, that because you've been inside a program as a player and all, sometimes these administrators get their egos bruised. And basically what it came down to is when we had John Laser, the play-by-play voice of Virginia Tech, he actually and I were recording an interview on Tuesday morning, and I was kind of puzzled because he told me they were going to wait to make a decision on Wednesday. And I thought that was kind of strange because the decision was supposed to be made on Monday about the game. And I was telling the guys here on the podcast that if they should have gone ahead and made a decision to play the game on say yes, we're playing the game East Carolina on Saturday, and then that would have given East Carolina plenty of time to make some kind of plan, and then you have the then we would have been able to try to figure out a way to get to from Blacksburg to go straight to Orlando or Florida. That was my concern, is that they waited so long that you have, and this is the reason I brought it up. You've been a player on the team. It's like what 100 people going from place to place. It's not like the four of us, like a foursome going playing golf to make a decision. This is a big time decision. And I understand their part as far as a home game, but I don't think he realizes how bad Eastern North Carolina floods and how bad hurricanes can be on our region of the state.
Yeah. And I didn't know all those details. And I mean, I think there's probably a lot behind the scenes, you know, that we don't know. But in saying that, I mean, East Carolina has to do what's best for them. And Virginia Tech, if they agree with it, I mean, I think that's BS. If they're tweeting out all those pictures and being sour about it. You know, they whether it's right or wrong, they don't need to do that through the media, do that out in public. I mean, that's ridiculous.
No,
and then
I agree.
We also have that they're going to sue the Babcock and the folks at Virginia Tech said they're going to sue us over a breach of contract, that it was going to sue us for $500,000. And he was implying that, like, we were scared to play the game. And I know you you guys as football players, it's kind of like, we'll meet you anytime, anywhere, any place on a street corner if we can play football, right? You're not scared to play Virginia Tech.
No, I mean, that's – yeah. No, we're not scared to play anybody. I mean, I would look forward to those games.
At least that's how it used to be. You know, whether these boys have the same attitude.
Sometimes I wonder, but yeah, I don't know. I used to always like the big games, but if he's making all these comments, we should find a way. You know, it's kind of like if someone's talking trash, it's like, okay, well, let's find a way to go settle it. I mean, I don't know if they'll do that, but you know, that'd be awesome.
There's really no way to. We don't have a common open date. And then you can play it the first weekend in December, but I would imagine that Virginia Tech's planning on playing in the ACC championship that weekend.
Right.
But what if they don't? I mean, what if they don't? Who's to say that they will?
Well, I mean, they're not going to schedule the game for December 1st at this point. We would have to keep it open until well into November, and then if they didn't, then we could schedule it. But you know, we have an open date, October 28th, and there's a lot of chatter, and I want to get Jay's thought on this. There's a lot of chatter about scheduling perhaps an FCS opponent for another home game to make up for that lost date on our open date, October 27th. There's several FCS opponents that had to cancel games. It seems like the most likely opponent would be Tennessee State, who's had to cancel two games this season. And what would your thoughts of that be about getting an 8th home game, playing an FCS opponent to make up for that? And kind of having an opportunity to – you're not going to forget the ANC win, but essentially we could get it back if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, I think anytime you miss out on a game, you definitely want to find a way to play another one. I mean, honestly, I mean, it would probably be good to get a win, but I'd rather play a bigger name school than, you know, another.
We have Nebraska. What about Nebraska? They're open.
I would love that.
We have Marshall or Nebraska.
Yeah, Nebraska had to cancel a game with Akron to start the season because of lightning, and they are looking for an opponent, and they have the same open date, October 27th.
I know even though that would probably be a loss, I'd rather play Nebraska than Tennessee, whoever, you know.
Tennessee
but State. that's just me as a fan, you know. I mean, I'd rather take a loss but watch our team play Nebraska than play Tennessee State. But that's just me wanting to see us play against good teams.
I'll look at it two ways. If we have a chance to get to a bowl, if we play competitively the next several weeks, get a few more wins, then I would say Tennessee State to try to get to that 6th win. If we keep losing and Montgomery needs to be fired, well, if we play at Nebraska, we'd probably get a pretty good payday.
Yeah.
And, you know, you maybe take $1 million payday to go up there in October to pay that. And I kind of, you know, I think Montgomery's buyout is $800,000. So
that's correct.
So there you go. Do the math. There's two ways to go with that.
I wanted to, overall, though, with East Carolina, Jay, I know with the month of October, that's the month that really is going to make or break Montgomery. When you look at, you have UCF, you have Temple. I think they bounce back today?
They did. They were 0-2 with losses to Villanova and Buffalo, and then dominated Maryland today.
That was really odd.
So good there.
And then you have UCF and Houston, and then you have the, who knows what if that'll be a bye week or another bye week or not. But those games, and then you have Memphis in early November. So there's a 4-game stretch right there that you've got to – wouldn't you say, guys, you have to steal at least one of those 4? I mean, what do you think, Jay?
They need to win – I'd say they need to win 5 for them to keep their jobs. 5 or 6.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. I mean – it depends how they win. I mean, before the season, I would have said 6, and then now, you know, that they're recruiting well, you know, 5, but there'd have to be a momentum 5, like where they reel off some wins at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that stretch David's talking about, we're projecting here. Hey, we got one win. You figure, you don't know, but you figure ODU is going to be a win. So that's two. So let's just pretend the South Florida's a loss. We'd be 2-2. And then that stretch he's talking about, if we can win one of those games, that give us 3 wins. And then if we do schedule an FCS in that off week, that'd be, you figure, 4 wins. And then that would leave us 4 games at the end of the season to win 2 out of 4 to get to a bowl. And they're winnable games. You have UConn through that stretch. You have Tulane. You have an improved Cincinnati and, Memphis. But I don't know how winnable Memphis is.
Yeah, and I think with our team, so much of it is going to be based off of confidence. Because if you win games at the start of the season, you're like, okay, you know, we're 2-1 or, you know, 3-3 or whatever. It's different from being like 1-5 and then you reel off some ones at the end. So, I mean, I think confidence is going to have a big thing to do with it. And, I mean, honestly, you know, again, I haven't been behind the scenes and seen our team as close to probably as you guys, but I tend to think we're probably somewhere in the middle of, you know, we're between our A&T performance and our North Carolina performance. Which means we'll see how good our team is, you know, in these coming weeks. Because obviously we played terrible against A&T and never should have lost that. And then, you know, then the next week, you know, we played awesome versus North Carolina. But, you know, we're going to, you know, the key is to play like we did against North Carolina every week. But it's just hard to forget a week earlier we played terrible. So,
yeah, I think the key for the rest of the season is going to be 3 things. 1, quarterback development with Reed Herron and with Holton Ahlers, as they continue to progress and develop. 2 is the running game, how well the O-line can run block, and if we can get a consistent running game. And 3, the defense, which has looked drastically improved under David Blackwell's leadership, and if it continues to get better as the season goes. If those 3 things happen, we got a chance to be a much improved football team. If not, then we won't be.
Yeah, and I just think there's games on the schedule that are very winnable. I mean, Old Dominion should be a win, but if we go out there and play like we did against A&T, we'll lose by 3 touchdowns. So, it just depends how into it they are. You know, if they're playing with confidence, and you know, if they're executing.
Do you think if Old Dominion and A&T lined it up, who do you think will win?
I mean, I guess you could say A&T because they beat us, but I mean, Old Dominion still has talent, and they have big, you know, bigger athletes.
They do. They're much more talented. But do you think there's something to be said for that winning 13 in a row, 14, 15 now?
Confidence. I do. I really do, and I don't mean to like hate on A&T, but that's like a varsity team losing to a JV team.
I know, I agree with you from our standpoint.
Yeah, and I mean, Old Dominion isn't as good, but I mean, they've got like a stud DN, a stud linebacker, 2 great wide receivers, and you know, other guys that are athletes, you know, so anyways, just based off of talent, they should, but you know, we know coaching has a lot to do with the discipline and those type of things.
Yes, 100%.
And November, and then you look at the November schedule with, like I said, you have Memphis. That's probably going to be an L. But then you have at Tulane is not a you know, that's the funny thing, Jay, we've been talking about, is the great thing about the league as far as American as a whole. The good news is the league is getting better. And you look at a Tulane team, even Memphis, but you look at Tulane, they're getting better.
Tulane took a tough loss today. UAB mm-hmm. got blistered by Coastal Carolina last week, Tulane lost today to UAB. So I don't know. I don't know if Tulane is as good this year as we initially thought they would have been.
See, and they, you know, we should still beat, like, teams like Tulane, UConn. Those are ones we should win for sure.
Absolutely.
But in Cincinnati.
In Cincinnati. But you know how we get towards the end of the year and, you know, going on the road and – those are games, like, if you want to save your job or if you want to have, you know, build the program, you got to win those ones. If you don't win those ones, you know.
Cincinnati is dramatically improved. We do get UConn at home. I think it's going to depend. Look, at the end of the year, if we're sitting there at 4 or 5 wins and we're trying to get to a bowl against Tulane and Cincy, you got to figure these guys are going to find a way to win it. If we're sitting there with 1 or 2 wins, it's probably over. I mean, what are we going to be playing for at that point? Everybody's going to be sick of Montgomery. The shine of the North Carolina win will be long gone. So I just think it's going to depend on where we are when we get to those late season games.
I agree. I agree completely.
Bubba, is there any other game from the day we need to look at?
Yeah. We've talked about some of the action in the American. I can run down those right quick. We actually had one just end out in Tulsa, Arkansas State. The Red Wolves have defeated the Golden Hurricane 29-20. So Tulsa was unable to build on its, its narrow loss last week at Texas. They had lost 28-21 and nearly shocked the Longhorns, but, another loss this week, and Shane Montgomery is probably on the hot seat out there. You had UConn. I really liked their quarterback, and that's what he led the Huskies to a 56-49 shootout victory over URI, University of Rhode Island, today. David Pendell, I believe, is his name, and he accounted for about 450 yards of total offense and five or six touchdowns.
Yeah, so he's talented. They ain't got much else though.
He's someone to keep an eye on when we play UConn at Dowdy-Ficklin later in the year. You talked about what went down in College Park with Temple beating Maryland. You talked about the Tulane game. Michigan took down SMU 45-20. Navy beat Lehigh 51-21, and then Houston, of course, is expected to contend in the American West Division, and they probably very well will, but they took a tough loss today, gave up over 600 passing yards and a 63-49 defeat out in Lubbock to Texas Tech.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. Texas Tech needed a win, and they got a good offense. Houston's got a good offense. Houston's fine. So, I mean, they're going to be their offense is excellent. They clearly – I need to work on capacity, but their offense is excellent. I think if you look at the American, what stood out to me is you had if my dog just chimed in here on the podcast, you had two wins today over the Big Ten with the win over Maryland, the win over Illinois. Jay, let me ask you this: being an analyst for ESPN and that whole Power Five, Group of Five crap that the media is made of. The American every week, it's a weekly occurrence now, and it has been since the league was formed, that we beat Power 5 teams. There was three wins over the Power 5 last week, two this week. What do you think the American's going to have to do to truly be recognized as a power conference?
Yeah, I think you got to win bowl games, and you just got to keep winning those non-conference games consistently. To get respect. I mean, I don't think it's one year. I mean, I think it's going to take multiple years. There's still always going to be doubt, but you got to do it consistently.
You know, UCF, it was kind of buried by the media. UCF had claimed that national championship, and, you know, they said they're a fictitious national championship, and then lo and behold, there was the Coley Matrix, which was an old part of the BCS formula, was left on the NCAA rule books. And according to their matrix, they were the national champions. So back in August, the NCAA actually recognized UCF as co-national champions with Alabama. And the media has buried it. They did not do many stories on it. And I just find that incredibly interesting that UCF is technically, look it up, co-national champions from this past season.
Yeah, and I mean, the way they beat Auburn, I mean, that was huge. But it's going to take a couple more years of doing that and more teams, you know, stepping up to get, you know, to get respect.
And that means, Jay, not to beat a dead horse, but we've been talking about it a lot. That means that you have to have, from top to bottom, when you're talking about a league like the American, like Rodney Dangerfield, to get no respect, you need to have coaching, and more coaching, and hopefully that's true at East Carolina, but you look at, we've talked about talked to Kelly Hines out in Tulsa. You've got to have a team like Tulsa has to be a bowl team at least, right? You can't have like a whole bunch of dogs in the league.
Yeah. You got to have strength throughout, and you got to have at least one team that's in the top 25 or that's got a national recognition. But, you know, it's hard. I mean, you know, it's not easy. But if, you know, if East Carolina can get to a point where, you know, we were a couple of years ago where we're in the top 25 and you got UCF maybe doing that or Memphis, you know, then the league will start getting more respect. But until that point, you know, people aren't even going to really look at it to see the depth of the league.
But, yeah, you had a lot of
coaching too. I mean, if these schools are getting good coaches in there, that's going to bring more notoriety to
them. Well, you had Houston go to the Peach Bowl and win it, beat Florida State the first year of the new formula of the playoff system, and then you had UCF do it last year, and Memphis was right there in the top 25 most of last year. I think we're doing what we need to do. Because even if you look at the bottom of the league, and unfortunately that's been East Carolina, we've had three nice non-conference wins each one of Montgomery's years when we were terrible. We beat NC State in 16, we beat BYU last year, and we beat North Carolina this year. So even the bottom of the league's been carrying their load non-conference.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I mean, I think the league really has been doing a good job. I think it's just going to take – you know, a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years of consistently doing that. You know, I mean, people didn't take Boise State for real until for the first couple of years until they, you know, they had to keep doing, winning those big games. And, you know, now finally, even though they're a mid-major, they're viewed as a power.
Yeah, they got took down a step today against Oklahoma State, but you're right. They Boise State is universally respected, and they should be. I tell you what, just from a standpoint of recognition, if I was the American Athletic Conference in the Mountain West, and you know, I don't think you could get Conference USA in the Sun Belt and the MAC to do it, but if I was Conference USA in the Mountain West, the American in the Mountain West, I would sue. I think the name, the recognition, the term rather, Power Five and Group of Five, I think it's a handicap. I think by using those terms, Power Five implies that we are lesser than. I don't think the term should be allowed to be used. I think they need to call it something else. I think that is such a, you know, it, especially being, you know, it's being used in basketball. Are you telling me? You show me a more powerful program historically in basketball than UConn.
Basketball is a different basketball. That league is great.
I just don't think the term should be allowed to be used. I think the Power Five thing should be done away with. You know, Tim Brando, back when he had his radio show, he talked about that at length when they started using it. He was blatantly against it and thought, kind of like I did, that it was a handicap. You're handicapping teams when you're saying, well, we're the Power Five and they're the Group of Five. Theoretically, Kansas is a power team and UCF isn't.
Yeah. Well, that's what there's a big problem, you know, Jay. I know you're a football player, but it seems like all the different sports have it right, and I wish that football, as much as I love it, that's the one area that I'm a big critic is of the sport itself of college football, is I really believe that there are a lot of people, maybe you're a player, so you'll say it for, but I really would love to see, I know you work for ESPN, and they would love to see it too, is an expansion at least to 8. If we can get 8 teams, and I know we could debate that all night, and we don't have the time to debate it, but I really want to see where we expand the playoffs, and it'll be a while, I know, but I think that would definitely help, especially when you're talking about Group of Five. It'll help our chances to get at least one team, and Kyle and I debate and talk about this all the time, one team to make the playoff.
Yeah, what you think? I think that's going to happen at some point, and I think that'll definitely help out because, you know, if you get a UCF in there, and they win a couple games, then that's going to change the perception.
Well, to me, what you do, if they'll ever go to 8, to me, the ideal situation that I think would be fair enough for everybody, and it would keep those five so-called power conferences happy. You have 6 conference champions get automatic bids. You have your 5 so-called power conferences get automatic bids. They're champions in. And then you have the best champion of the group of 5 get in. So that's 6 automatic bids, and then you have 2 at-larges, whoever the 2 best at-large teams that don't get in. And then, you know, to me, that would be a fair enough formula where if a UCF or a Boise State or maybe one day in East Carolina, we win the American and they look at us and they go, well, that's the best group of 5 champion there in the playoff. every year you at least would know you would have a shot. And if you win your conference, at least you know you're going to have a shot at making the playoffs.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the thing right now that I'm disappointed with is with East Carolina is the basketball team and the baseball team have more of a shot to make the tournament than the football team. It just seems very weird. You played football at East Carolina, Jay. We've had a lot of great teams that are deserving to go to the next level, to a playoff. Even if they didn't win it, at least to be at least to have it on paper that you have a legitimate tournament. To me, would I know that we're putting you in a tough spot there because you were on ESPN. But I think that ESPN would want more teams, right, down the line. Maybe not right now.
Yeah, I mean, whatever's going to make more money. And I think having more teams would definitely – I think it's going to build more excitement. So yeah, I mean, I just think it's a matter of time before it happens.
Jay, who are you calling next weekend? What's your assignment for ESPN?
Next week I'm going to be – I'm doing high school football on Friday night for Sinclair. And then on Saturday I'm doing Campbell University on Saturday. So okay. I will be local.
So when you say Sinclair, you mean stadium?
No, broadcasting.
It's like WRDC. So it's Channel 28 in Raleigh.
Yeah, Sinclair Media. Okay.
Yeah, Sinclair Media. Yeah.
Yeah, they own the stadium network.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you're doing the Campbell game for
Campbell next week.
For is that gonna be for ESPN Plus?
ESPN Plus, yeah, I believe.
Okay.
I want to give some love to that, by the way. Kyle and I have been talking about. I don't know, Bubba, do you have ESPN Plus?
I do not.
All right. Uh-oh. Wait a minute. We're putting him on the spot. I knew that. I knew you didn't. You got to get it. Dude, you've got to get ESPN Plus. It's tremendous. And, Jay, I was, I have to say, between my smartphone and my tablets, I love ESPN Plus. So, major kudos to you guys. It's been a tremendous asset for those of us that have to work on weekends and have their parents, and we're trying to be good parents and husbands and stuff. It's been a great resource for me. Let me just say that.
That's awesome. No, I understand what you're saying. That's great. You can keep it in your. It's always in your pocket.
That's right. What do you think?
I agree. And I have the question for Jay about from the broadcasting standpoint, and then we'll start to wrap this thing up. Jay, how soon out do you get your assignments? Is it a weekly thing? Does ESPN or whoever, Sinclair Broadcast, do they contact you on, the week before or are you scheduled out the rest of the year?
Well, yeah, so it kind of depends. Like for the high school stuff, I know the high school games, I'm doing all year. And then on the ESPN stuff, it's different based off of the game, who was contracted through summer. Contracted through, a production unit, and then some are through the school. So, so right now I kind of know my schedule for the year, and it's all going to be Campbell and Charlotte. So,
Campbell and Charlotte. Okay. Well,
yeah.
All right. Well,
but that can always, that can always change too.
So, yes. I mean, I thought maybe you would, maybe they'd stick you up in Boone for an App State game or something. That'd be fun.
Yeah, they changed it a little bit because now they're doing it, they're booking it through the school.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's kind of different, booking. Some are through schools and some are through ESPN. So yeah.
Gotcha.
I was going to say, Dave, a few things before we get off, tonight. And I was gonna say, I know that's what we've talked about. Some of the national games, Kyle mentioned what Boise State, did, and as far as falling 44-21 in Stillwater, taking a look at some of the national games. I know we talked about it off the air, but did we talk about what BYU did up in?
We did not.
No, that's what that was. What I was going to mention that. Yeah, I was going to mention that before we went.
So what a huge victory that was for Kalani Sitake.
To think we just whooped them last year in Greenville. And then today they beat BYU, or excuse me, they beat Wisconsin in Madison. Jay, did you have a chance to watch any of that?
I saw the highlights, but they also beat Arizona.
They did
one, so they've
they turned it around quick over there.
Yeah, they did. They you know, I think he's an interesting coach. I don't necessarily think he's the best X's and O's sideline coach, but I do think he's a hell of a motivator, and those guys play hard for him, and he plays, he's a very kind of meathead kind of guy, and very physical, and I think the team has kind of bought into that, and they're just playing hard-nosed football.
Yeah, no, I mean, and sometimes you don't have to be a tactician as long as you have assistant coaches that can do that.
Right.
And you kind of, you know, you kind of stay in your lane. But you know, there's different ways to win, but you're not a tactician. You gotta be able to motivate and let your assistants do their job.
And he believes in BYU because he's a former BYU player. So that probably helps a lot too.
Yep.
And a couple other games, guys, that where you had G5 teams knocking off P5 teams, and because I don't believe we've talked about either of these, and neither one of these really surprised me. But you had Troy, of course, going to Lincoln and taking down Nebraska, and they built a 17-0 lead in the first half, and then ended up winning 24-19. And Nebraska was without their starting quarterback Taylor Martinez, but. So Nebraska is off to its first 0-2 start since 1957. Not exactly the way they envisioned starting the Scott Frost era, even though I do think long-term that he'll be the answer there, and I think he'll have a lot of success at his alma mater. And then you also had Seth Luttrell leading the North Texas Mean Green into Fayetteville, Arkansas, and the Hogs under first-year head coach Chad Morris threw six picks, and North Texas won that ball game 44-17.
Seth Luttrell, head coach of North Texas, a guy who was assistant coach at UNC under Larry Fedora, and really ever since he's left UNC, Carolina football has gone backwards. He's a guy that I would keep an eye on if the East Carolina job comes up, and Seth Luttrell is a great coach and a nice win for him today over Arkansas. Guys, right now as we speak, there's 3:42 to go in Louisville, Kentucky, and Western Kentucky is down by a field goal driving home the Cardinals. There's another potential group of five, Power Five upset.
Wow. Well, Bobby Petrino is actually, he might be looking for a job in the next year or two if he doesn't turn it around, don't you think, guys?
I think he's got this season, unless they just totally, you know, just go backwards, but, yeah, I think they expected a little more out of him his second trip around to Louisville, and they've been average at best. And if they lose to Western tonight, and this is not a good Western Kentucky team, this isn't the Coach Brohm Western Kentucky, that would be a big loss for Coach Petrino there in Louisville.
Yeah, Western Kentucky, like you say, Kyle, they're 0-2. They played at Wisconsin, lost 34-3, so not a ton of shame in that. But then last week, they failed.
The Black Bears.
31-28 to Maine, yes. And, of course, Maine's typically solid, but at the same time, that's one they should win.
Yeah, do you guys think, and Jay, you can sit this one out if you want to, being you work for ESPN, but do you guys think that Coach Petrino can get that secretary yet on the back of his Harley to make him feel better tonight if they lose it?
Oh, my goodness. Well, they're not – I don't think they're together anymore, are they?
Oh, I don't know. I don't keep up with Petrino's personal you know, affairs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, I don't know.
It's a little joke.
Yeah. Well, moving right along. Like he said, he probably would want to sit out there. Yeah, I wanted to see if, as far as we've got a couple minutes left, and we love East Carolina. And, Jay, do you think Pirates went ahead and went down to Orlando while we have you on? I think a smart move by them to go ahead and go down there so they definitely could get to the game. Do you think they'll have an advantage to go down there and have a chance to pull off a victory against Charlie Strong and the Bulls?
I'll tell you what, in situations like that, it's either going to be a huge advantage or it's going to be a huge negative. There's no in between.
Right.
I'll tell you this. I mean, I don't think they're going to win down there. But I do think it can be a bonding moment for the team, just being away and being together for that long and just kind of having to go through a tough situation together. I think it can be something that kind of galvanizes them together, but I don't think they're going to win down there. So maybe later on the season, but maybe not this weekend. There's worse places to be stuck than Orlando, Florida. So that's,
they can go to Disney World.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Universal, and they can go to all the beach. Maybe they can have a good time. And no, they're knowing Montgomery, they're not going to have. That's definitely not going to be on the docket for sure. But then you have Old Dominion, and then you have a away game at Temple. Maybe you could find some ways to win a couple of games there. And like we said, well, we could talk all night long about the Pirates, but it's going to be an interesting season. And I want to personally, Jay, thank you so much for coming on with us. You're a great sport. I know that there's many things you could be doing on a Saturday night, but you decided to hang out with us. So it means a lot to have you on, and we're very excited to have you on, watching on ESPN Plus. It's been a real thrill to know that, hey, we know that guy, and we're really proud of all that you're doing.
Well, hey, listen, seriously, thank you guys so much. You guys, I'm really proud of y'all, and it's awesome to be on with you guys. And anytime you want me back, just let me know. But thanks for having me on.
All right, and Bubba or Kyle, do you have any final thoughts before we put this podcast to bed?
No, just was good to watch some football today once my power came back on, and it's great, Jay. Like to echo David's thoughts, appreciate you being on, and I was watching the Charlotte ODU game, and I had no idea you were calling it, and then I heard whoever your broadcast partner was, that along with Jay Sunhalter, and I said, Jay Sunhalter. Like former East Carolina tight end Jay Sunhalter.
Yeah, the same guy.
I thought that was pretty cool. Glad to see you doing well calling games, and you and objectively, I listened to you since you were a Pirate. You see how you did to make sure you didn't embarrass us. You do a good job. So,
well, thank you. Yeah, I love doing it. I love staying involved, and I mean, the best part about it is just staying involved in the game and working with other people, and opening opportunities or relationships to, like this, to hang out with you guys and talk about football. So I appreciate the sport, though. I mean, it honestly means a lot. If you guys check in and listen, I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
And Bubba, do you have any final thoughts?
I'm sad. I will say, I know a moment ago that Kyle mentioned a couple of upsets that were potentially happening. We have Northwestern right now only leading Terry Bowden and the Akron Zips by 2, and there's still about 9 minutes left to go in that ball game at Ryan Field, so maybe the Zips can pull that one off.
Terry Bowden's quietly done a good job up in Akron.
Right, they won the division last year.
Yes,
exactly. Before falling to Toledo in the championship.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see.
But yeah, I was just going to say, other than that, just to reiterate everything that Kyle and Dave said, just thank you so much for coming on, Jay. I guess we've known each other now for, I guess, about 15 years. It doesn't seem like it, but going on 15 years, we met, of course, through our mutual friend, Britt Johnson, and really, really enjoyed talking football with you through the years, and look forward to having you on again.
Oh yeah, no, it's awesome. It doesn't seem like it's been that long, but it's good to have relationships that, we've known each other that long. So I appreciate it again, yeah, and thanks so much to all you guys.
And I'm finally going to say my heart and prayers go out to all the folks listening to Eastern North Carolina for all the flooding, unfortunately the death toll is rising, and my heart and prayers go out to everybody with Hurricane Florence. And we're Eastern North Carolina strong. We're going to bounce back. And certainly, that you've got all of us, and there's plenty of people rooting hard for you, not only in Eastern North Carolina, but around the country and state, country, and world. So with that being said, thanks again to Jay. This is Dave Richmond along with Kyle from LaGrange Barber and Bubba Rosenbaum. And this has been the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.